So today we're continuing to read from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, Chapter 8. Today is text number 245. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So the word meanings of text number 245. Prabhu Kahe, the Lord inquired, Kaun, what, vidya, knowledge, vidya, madhye, in the midst of knowledge, sara, the most important, raya kahe, Ramandarai answered, Krishna bhakti, devotional service to Krishna, vina, except vidya, knowledge, education, nahi, there is not, Ara, any other. Prabhu kahe kon vidya vidya madhye sara.
Prabhu kahe kon vidya vidya madhye sara.
Rai kahe Krishna bhakti vina vidya nahi ara. Prabhu kahe kon vidya vidya madhye sara.
Prabhu kahe kon vidya vidya madhye sara.
Raya kahe Krishna bhakti vina vidya nahi a. Prabhu kahe kon vidya vidya madhye sara. Rahe kahe Krishna bhakti vina vidya nahi ar. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. On one occasion, the Lord inquired, of all types of education, what is the most important? Ramana Rai replied, "There is no education that is important other than the transcendental devotional service of Krishna." Purport. Texts 245 to 257 are all questions and answers between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai. In these exchanges, there is an attempt to show the difference between material and spiritual existence. Education in Krishna consciousness is always transcendental and is the best of all forms of education. Material education aims at increasing the activities of material sense gratification. Beyond material sense gratification is another negative form of knowledge called Brahmavidya, or transcendental knowledge. However, beyond that Brahmavidya, or knowledge of the impersonal Brahman, is knowledge of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, Vishnu. This knowledge is higher, and higher still is devotional service to Lord Krishna, which is the topmost form of education. According to Srimad Bhagavatam 4:29-49, Tat karma hari doshnam dosham yat savidya tan matir yaya. Work meant for pleasing the Supreme Lord is best, and education that enhances one's Krishna consciousness is best. Also, according to Srimad Bhagavatam 7:5-23-24, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Smaranam Padasevanam, Archanam Vandanam Dasyam, Satyam Atma Nivedanam, Iti Pum Sarpita Vishnu, Bhaktis Chain Navalakshana, Kriyate Bhagavat Jada Yada, Tam Manye Ditam Uttamam. This is a statement given by Prahlad Maharaj in answer to a question raised by his father. Prahlad Maharaj said, "To hear or chant about Vishnu, to remember him, to serve his lotus feet, to worship him, to offer prayers to him, to become his servant and friend, to sacrifice everything for his service, all these are varieties of devotional service. One who is engaged in such activities is understood to be educated to the topmost perfection." Om Agyana Temanandasya Kananjana Shalakaya Chakshuramilutam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So as pointed out to me this morning by Madan Mohan Prabhu, this verse is about education. I just happened to be the Minister of Education for ISKCON. So I want to talk a little bit about education and then about the Ministry of Education and what the devotees involved with that service are attempting to do to fulfill Prabhupada's desires in regard to education, and in line with this verse from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. First we start with the jiva, the spirit soul. The jiva, by its very nature, requires education. We know from hearing from Srila Prabhupada and the Shastra that the jiva is both active as a doer and also cognizant or a knower. Of course, there may be other characteristics of the jiva also, but I'm just focusing on these two for now. A knower and a doer. But due to the minute size of the jiva, this being a knower or being cognizant can be limited. We know that the jiva is also tatastha shakti. In the middle ground between the original spiritual existence and being covered by the powerful material energy or ignorance. So because of the size, minute size of the jiva, even though, as is the Supreme Lord, all cognizant, the jiva is also cognizant, but it can be covered. It can be covered. And this is actually a very dangerous situation because ignorance is powerful. But as an actor, if we're covered by ignorance, then we still retain our nature of acting, but we act in ignorance. And when you act in ignorance, then that's called fruitive work, fruitive activity. And you're caught in a cycle of repeated birth and death, of good karma, bad karma, so many things. And as the Bhagavad Gita says, you have to meet with evil in various species of life. Ignorance is very powerful. And so it requires, the jiva requires education. And education implies a systematic exposure to knowledge. And so what is knowledge, one might ask? And how does one obtain it? Recently I was speaking on this topic and I gave the example of knowledge, trying to understand what is knowledge in terms of how it orientates us to the world around us. Because that makes all the difference, doesn't it? How we're orientated to the world around us, whether we're orientated on the basis of knowledge or whether we're orientated on the basis of ignorance. Prabhupada talks about three different ways that one can be a learner or a student of knowledge. The first class is that one hears once some instruction and one takes it up, follows it. That's the first class, intelligent man who, once exposed to knowledge, hears it and then takes it up. Second class, intelligent or learner, might be one who hears knowledge, is exposed to knowledge, but before one can act on that knowledge, one has to suffer some consequences of not following good advice. Second class learner. You have to second class learner sticks his hand in the fire and gets burned before he understands that, oh, I shouldn't stick my hand in the fire. First class intelligent person, first class learner, he hears, if you stick your hand in the fire, you're going to get burned. Don't do it. And he doesn't do it. Second class has to experience that. Now, there's a third class also, and that person doesn't learn even after suffering the consequences. He still sticks his hand back into the fire. So being exposed to knowledge, better we be first class rather than second class, and certainly we need to avoid being a third class learner who has to suffer consequences but still doesn't learn. Because the material nature, being powerful, has another aspect. It gets worse. It always gets worse with the material energy. Maybe you've noticed in your own life, I know I have in mind, that if you don't heed knowledge, it's not just that you suffer at the same level the second time, that you suffer more. It sort of has this multiplying effect. Ignorance does. It's very powerful. Ignorance is very powerful. There's a saying that goes around the material education and university scene. I think it's attributed to a former president of Harvard University, that if you think education is expensive, try ignorance. Indicating that, education costs a lot, but it's going to cost you a lot more, and it's going to be much more complex for you if you're just satisfied with ignorance. So education, how education relates to knowledge is that education, it gives, is a systematic way of understanding how we approach the world around us, what we do and what we try to accomplish. A man in knowledge won't try to accomplish the same thing as a man in ignorance. A man in knowledge will approach the world differently, just like the devotees of the Lord. We talk about knowledge and they talk about knowledge in terms of material education and material circles, let's say university education. We see that Prabhupada didn't place so much emphasis on that. Because it orientates you to the world around you in ways which are sometimes quite quite demonic, in a sense. I mean, if you think about how the science is used, the most dollars of the U.S. government or any government go in terms of defense or weapons accumulation and development. It takes a great deal of knowledge to be able to create weapons, more and more sophisticated weapons. But what are they used for? They're used for the same things that blunt clubs or bows and arrows were used for in previous centuries, to kill people, to hurt others. So is that, how our knowledge should be utilized? Is it actually even knowledge? I think that could even be questioned. Is it actually even knowledge? Spiritual knowledge, a spiritually learned person walks in the world just like Murghari the hunter. You remember the incident of Narada Muni delivering Murghari, who was a hunter. He had a technology of half-killing animals that he learned from his family history. And he was acting in ignorance. And so every time he half-killed an animal and the animal was suffering, his own future suffering was multiplying. But he didn't know this. And so therefore, he was acting on the basis of so-called knowledge that he had, but it was actually ignorance. And his problems were just multiplying. By the mercy of Narada Muni, he could see what was in store for him, and he changed. He changed how he orientated himself to the world. So much so that when he was walking on the path and there were some ants, he brushed them aside. He didn't even want to step on an ant. This is a result of knowledge. Knowledge changes things. If knowledge doesn't change something, then it's not really knowledge. So knowledge changes things. It changed Murghari's orientation to the world, where he didn't want to step on an ant, even, and cause harm to an ant. And of course, we can see how the knowledge we've gotten from Srila Prabhupada has changed our lives. I mean, where would each one of us in this room be if we had not received some knowledge and it had not affected our life in one way or another? I know when I met Rigatmaka in Port Authority Terminal in New York, 1973, I think it was, she gave me a big stack of books. And when I got on a bus, I was going on a bus to go home to Albany, New York. And when I got on a bus, I had this big stack of books sitting on my lap. And one Indian gentleman got on the bus, and as he walked by me, he saw I had these books, and he saw what they were. Sanskrit titles, etc. And he said to me, good luck on your path. My life has not been the same since then. The devotees hit town the next weekend, and I just joined up. And so knowledge changes things. Knowledge changes things. And so we have to be prepared for that knowledge. Sometimes we get afraid. So knowledge comes, and we don't want it to change us. We want to resist it. But actual knowledge will prevail. And so knowledge has to be systematically experienced. And when it's systematically experienced, that's education. That's education. And so Prabhupada wanted very much education to be an important focus of all of our lives in ISKCON. And he showed this in a couple of ways. You all know the seven purposes of ISKCON, right? Seven purposes of ISKCON that Prabhupada put in his ISKCON society there in the summer of 1966 in New York. Actually, it goes back further than that. When he was trying to form the League of Devotees in India before coming to America, he had also developed purposes of what he wanted his organization to be. And it included the same types of things that we find in the Articles of Incorporation of ISKCON that were put together and legalized in 1966. If you look at those seven purposes, just take a guess. I mean, Jadmaster, you can't answer this one because you work in education also. But how many of those seven, neither can you. Lakshmi, you can't answer this question either. Oh, wait a minute, let's see. Mahendrani can't answer this question either. Kuti can't answer this question because they know already. How many of those seven purposes deal with education? Five? I think all of them do. Seven. Seven out of seven, they deal with ISKCON. Let me just read you the first purpose. The first purpose of ISKCON, to systematically propagate spiritual knowledge to society at large and to educate all peoples in the techniques of spiritual life in order to check the imbalance of values in life and to achieve real unity and peace in the world. Now, a lot of people might say that, well, that's the purpose of our university, that's the purpose of our education program as well, to create, achieve real unity and peace in the world, or to balance out the values that people have in life that sometimes get out of whack. But Prabhupada was intent on propagating spiritual knowledge, not material knowledge. Material knowledge, as I said, results in the latest laser-directed bomb or something to kill people. Which, when you think about it, it's not even really an advancement, because previously, Vedic knowledge, they could like send a mantra to a certain person and get that one person and have to like have collateral damage, as they say. So it was actually more precise in the past. But anyway, that was also a type of material knowledge. But spiritual knowledge is a different thing. Spiritual knowledge is meant to have a awaken the soul within all of us. And so that's the very first purpose of ISKCON. And so it was very important to Prabhupada to systematically propagate a systematic presentation of knowledge. We published this in our, we have a little brochure in the Ministry of Education. It's a very nice one. I didn't have a color one with me, so I had to print it from the computer. But maybe I'll get some and put them at the back if the temple allows, so people can see the type of things that we're doing. But that's in our brochure, because we wanted people to know that, you know, Prabhupada considered this important, a systematic presentation of spiritual knowledge, which is education. Now, the other way in which Prabhupada showed the importance of education is involved with how he organized the society. The very first, and I think the only ministry connected with the GBC, the Governing Body Commission, is a ministry of education. Isn't Lakshmana the only one Prabhupada actually created? There are other ministries now, many, and they have their functions in the running of our society. But Prabhupada appointed a minister of education because he felt it to be a priority in his mission to propagate this systematic knowledge in the form of a ministry. So I want to tell you a little bit about the ministry and what it does and what its approach is. So I'm going to read from this brochure different things and give some examples. The vision. Of course, the Ministry of Education has gone through different forms with different emphasis over the years. Some realistic, some not realistic. Although the Ministry of Education was established as a GBC ministry, funding wasn't there. And you know that most governments, if they want to have a system of education in their country or their state or something, they fund it. They put a lot of funding in it. So we weren't so good at funding the ministry. And therefore, sometimes the expectations were a little unrealistic. I think Jagadish Prabhu, being the Minister of Education without any funds, he tried to actually take responsibility for a lot of schools around the movement, and it was hard. How can one person with no money be in charge of so many schools in different places in the world? So there's a little different emphasis now. The ministry doesn't take charge of a particular school, but rather encourages locally for the schools and devotees to take charge of the efforts and I think it's more realistic, as I say, not making false promises that we're going to run your school. No, we're not going to run your school. You're going to run your school, and we can give you some counsel, advice, experts to help in that endeavor. So when I read our vision here, I think it reflects that. And I think it's important for the devotees to realize that. And it's part of our job in the ministry to let you know what you can expect from the Ministry of Education. And we want to hear from you whether you think that it's realistic. Because we've been through a situation in the past where it wasn't realistic what the devotees expected or what the devotees thought they could give. And it didn't work out too well. So we're trying to hone our vision on something that's realistic to do this important service that Prabhupada gave. So the vision, to provide Krishna-conscious education of a high quality to everyone through temples, educational institutions, and various global initiatives. Ministry of Education, by the way, is not just limited to like gurukuls. That's another thing that we sort of may have thought about past efforts. It's just about the gurukuls, just about children. No, it's about all levels of education, and I'm going to describe those different levels to you here, but try to think of education more broadly like that. So our mission statement: to develop comprehensive educational systems globally that foster higher spiritual values, fulfill the needs of ISKCON members and the larger society, and bring about excellence in all areas of life. Again, this is the point about knowledge changing, changes things. So by systematically imparting knowledge through a system of education, we intend to create excellence in all areas of a devotee's life. Now, of course, to do that, there have to be standards. And based on the experience of many devotees throughout the years, And I say we have some of them here today, Lakshmi Moni, Jamasu Guru, Mahendrani. They've worked in education many, many years, and they have experience. And so they can help to create the type of standards and systems that we should strive for so that we reach our goal of excellence in life. They can advise on, as it's described here in our further in our mission statement, to establish, maintain, and support and monitor effective quality systems, to communicate and cooperate with all levels of ISKCON governance, to involve charitable, academic, professional, business, and governmental organizations and individuals in actively supporting ISKCON education. So this is our mission, and it's one which is a collaborative effort to try to gather as many resources and interest as possible and fan the spark so that we can together achieve these goals. Our brochure here talks specifically about the ministry, and it gives this view. Let me just read it while I have it in front of me here. The Ministry of Education seeks to facilitate, administer, and develop ISKCON's educational system. The ministry is primarily an empowering body, facilitating education and educators. Therefore, the ministry recommends principles, guidelines, and values. It is also involved with issues of assessment and accreditation for education initiatives and institutions. Thus, the ministry takes moral responsibility for the development of education in ISKCON, but otherwise it does not directly control any facet of the implementation of education. This is left to the array of educational initiatives already existing. One thing that ISKCON educational efforts has produced over the years are many, many devotees who are doing many, many wonderful things around the world. For instance, right in our community here, we have Mother Tapas Feeney. She developed a curriculum for Sunday schools that's being used all over the world so that our congregation can bring their children on Sunday and get them exposed to a systematic presentation of knowledge and thus affect their lives. And there are many such endeavors around the world, even things, and I, you know, maybe should turn up the mic on this one, you know, Brother Andrew. If I use the devotee names, it may not be so obvious, but Tosan Krishna Prabhu, always a long-standing interest in education, and he did it with his life. He, you know, developed a whole school that serves the devotee community very effectively. And one of the particular things that I like about what's happening in his endeavor is that he's developed a succession plan that's working, that's bringing young people, Krishna Priya, into positions of responsibility in the school. And being 60 plus years old and seeing the end of that type of activity in his life, he's actually very effectively handed off the responsibilities to a young man who is similarly dedicated to education. I think is very exemplary. So a lot of good things going on around the world, a lot of good things in a lot of different areas. So let's just briefly mention some of the different areas that are working. I think the area most established in terms of this idea of assessment and standard, making things standardized, I think that the most successful effort thus far in that regard is an organization called the Board of Examiners. The Board of Examiners administrates the Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Sarvabhauma, Bhakti Vedanta degree programs in ISKCON. It creates standards for centers where these courses are offered around the world. It creates a standard test and what areas of knowledge and what level of knowledge one has to have to receive a Bhakti Shastri degree. I think Prabhupada was very much keen about these levels of these degree levels being offered as indicative of a certain level of knowledge and even spiritual advancement. I think he said that one can't take sannyas if one doesn't have like Bhakti Vedanta or something like that. Very detailed type of standards. And the Board of Examiners meets regularly, has an email conference, and they establish all the accreditation of centers. Like if here, if we wanted to open a Bhakti Shastri authorized center in Alachua, we'd have to get in touch with the Board of Examiners and have them view. Is it facilities also Lakshmi Mohan, or is it just the okay, it's already done. Curriculum, teachers, administrators. Yeah, all these things are part of the seal of approval that you can do this, so that we have some standardization around the world. Not that I have a Bhakti Shastri and it means this in this place, and somebody else has a Bhakti Shastri there and it means that in that place. No, so that's the one body I think that's most developed in terms of doing that. And you see, that's not a Gurukula. That's a different level of education. It's Shastric education. Oh, I'm neglecting Janmasthami Guru, who started a level of education, the Mayapur Institute of Higher Education, and training. I think that was added on later. No, it's drop the T. but again, this was an endeavor to systematically give persons an opportunity to be exposed to transcendental knowledge. And quite successful. People from all over the world would come there. I had the fortune to be invited by Janmasthami every year during the graduation ceremony to take part in that. Students from all over the world getting Bhakti Shastri degrees. So it's a good program, especially for devotees as they're just beginning their Krishna consciousness. And so that's one level of education. Of course, there are endeavors such as the Bhaktivedanta College in Radadesh, which are actually accredited colleges and universities where people can get academic degrees that are recognized by outside institutions. Another sort of affiliated thing is the Oxford Center for Hindu Studies that Shonaka Rishi Prabhu has been explaining during his trip here this week. So those kind of endeavors are connected. Now, we have this symbolism of how the Ministry of Education works of being the string with pearls on a thread. So when I mention like the Oxford Center for Hindu Studies, obviously that's not an ISKCON program. It's not under, so to speak, the Ministry of Education, but rather it is associated in various ways, but connected in such a way that, you know, Shonaka can come here to an ISKCON temple or anywhere in the world to an ISKCON temple and talk about this program and encourage devotees in that community. If there are any young people or others who want to, you know, engage in this scholarly work, to contact them. So I carry his message and he carries the message of ISKCON education. So there is, in that level of tertiary or college level education, Bhaktivedanta College in Belgium, in Budapest, Hungary, there's another Bhaktivedanta College endeavor in this regard. There's online Bhaktivedanta College courses. There's the Bhaktivedanta Research Center in Calcutta that Hari Sari Prabhu has developed. All of these things are resources for one that wants systematic presentation of transcendental knowledge or education, come to the website and you'll find information how to get it. Let's see. Of course, there are many different types of courses that are initiated by the GBC to help develop the movement. There's a disciples course that's recently been developed by Nutama Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada's position, a communications course, leadership courses, all these type of they're almost like professional degrees for the devotees, how to make our society function and operate more effectively. There's a book distribution course. All these things are established as education is necessary. I mentioned Sunday schools. There's also homeschooling initiatives for devotees who don't have the opportunity to come together and form a school like we have here. They may be isolated and they want to educate or systematically expose their children to transcendental knowledge. So there's resources on homeschooling that have been developed, particularly by Aruda Devi Dasi, who's the mother of a couple of those Oxford graduates that Shona Girishi was talking about. Their children are homeschooled. So that's a valid alternative as well. So all these different types of educational initiatives we try to string together, and being a facilitating and a communicating body. Sometimes we get requests from a school, for instance, say, hey, we need help in this regard, and we'll get an expert like Mother Irmala, who has years of education experience, send her there. She'll agree to go there and help them for a while, develop their problems or get over some of the difficulties they may be having. We hope to, in the future, to be able to have money or funds to funnel through different places that need it. Although that's not right there right now, but we do have some development going on in our own ministry to put that in place. So one last thing I can let you know we do is conferences where we get educators and people interested in education together to foster a sort of camaraderie. We've done it for 3 years in a row in Europe at Rotterdam and this year in Houston. We had our first North American conference in many, many years where the educators just get together and have the opportunity to share their experience and knowledge and go back enriched to their communities. At the meeting in Houston, Vishwambar Prabhu, head of the Bana school, he participated by telephone. He couldn't be there in person, but he was there. Now, as a minister, I take myself, and so I'm almost like a political head of the agency in that sense, and therefore I have a message. And my message to everyone is that ISKCON needs to become an educated society. And there are 4 reasons why we need to be an educated society. We need an educated populace. The devotees need to be educated. What to speak of the fact that ignorance sort of may take us away from Krishna consciousness, but if we're not educated, then we can't properly do the following things. If we're not an educated society, we cannot properly honor Srila Prabhupada. You know the story of Narottam Das Thakur. He was preaching and he was challenged, you know, who are you? You know, you think you're a big guru, but you're just, you're not even a brahmana. So he was challenged like that. That people are following you by sentiment. And so Ramachandra and one other devotee, they put the guys, a big pundit was going to come and try to defeat Narottam, but because his disciples wanted to uphold the honor of their guru, they took positions of like a panwala and one other seller. And when all the Brahmins came to the town, they were going to defeat Narottam Das Thakur, but they had to cook and everything, so they went to these merchants to get their wares. And the merchants started speaking to them in perfect Sanskrit, and And then that elevated to debates, and then the merchants of Panwala defeated these big, big scholars. And they all just realized, well, if the disciples of a Panwala in this town, who's a disciple of Narottam, can defeat us, then, you know, what will we do when we face Narottam himself? So they upheld the honor of their guru and drove away these people who were going to dishonor him. Similarly, we have a responsibility to honor Srila Prabhupada. There are challenges to Prabhupada's pure teachings and the benedictions he's given to the world. Who's going to stand up and face those challenges unless we have an educated society? We can't afford not to be educated, because that is our responsibility to honor Srila Prabhupada. We have to preserve and perpetuate ISKCON's and Srila Prabhupada's teachings. If we don't have our children who are educated, how are we going to perpetuate? We have limited lifespans. Someone said within 20 years, practically all Prabhupada's disciples will have disappeared from this world. Maybe not all. I hope I'm still around. But many. Will be departed. And so, who's going to take up the mantle? If we don't take the time to educate them, then no one will be over there to take the mantle, because ignorance, as I said, is powerful, and it can change something that for the wrong direction. And we also, for ourselves, there's so many challenges to our faith, so many different ideas that surface in the society of devotees. If we're not educated, then we will not be prepared to meet those challenges to our tradition, to our understanding of the Shastra. It's very important that we be an educated society. So those are some thoughts on education, the Ministry of Education's role. Any comments anyone has for me, Prabhu?
I just had two kind of different level questions. One was, in the very beginning, you mentioned three ways of learning. And the third way, I'm just trying to understand, is there actually some learning that occurs?
We hope eventually. I mean, maybe after 2-3 times, one learns something that... After they've already demonstrated they're a third-class learner, they might get it, you know, after a while. But if they don't, then you're right. It's a type of failure to learn, even after that. So.
The other question is that the nature of the soul is described as such, ananda. This part where it's full of knowledge. Explain what exactly that includes.
Well, that's the original pure state of a living entity. But because a living entity, jiva, is infinitesimal, it can be overcome by the powerful inferior energy of the Lord. So even though the spirit soul is all-knowing, all cognizance, full of all knowledge, still he can become covered over. But proof that he's full of all knowledge constitutionally is that he can become uncovered and become completely pure. Not that his constitution, the constitution of the jiva, is like 95% full of knowledge and 5% ignorance is his constitutional position. Because if that was true, then we could never become completely free from this material energy. But we can, and the fact that we can is proof that our original nature is completely 100% pure freedom from that, and the covering is only temporary. Any other questions, comments, anything else? Yes.
you're talking about Board of Examiners checking, you know, that everything is up to par. And I guess that's theoretical spiritual knowledge. My concern or question is, how do you make sure that those who are, might be getting these degrees are not just getting theoretical spiritual knowledge, but actually they're being educated? Is there some way that...
Well, I think the course design for Bhakti Shastri, and that's something you can ask Bhakti Moni, who's a teacher of that, but the course design is... And everything that we do in education is not meant just to be theoretical. I mean, there is an application of the knowledge that's part of every course that goes on. I mean, wouldn't you say, John Masumi, that it's not just theoretical knowledge that goes on, say, like at Mayapur Institute or something? It's not just that they just do academic knowledge there, but there are elements of how it's taught, how the exercises are built, that are meant to be gyan and vigyan. Mm-hmm.
We have learning objectives for every lesson. So by the end of this lesson, the student should be able to demonstrate a certain amount of learning that's taken place. And we have the two most prominent learning objectives that teachers use are personal application, you know, how to apply this in my life, this philosophy, and preaching application.
Mm-hmm.
So those two things, and there is a specific amount of learning that takes place, and it's can be objectively observed that they've actually done this. So it takes it off of the platform of just gyan, but into vigyan,
mm-hmm. Okay.
And it works. It's experience, a big transformation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's what I get from the closing ceremonies that I've attended over the years. Sometimes the students speak and they tell how their life has been changed. So, some problem.
Considering what the heavy statements Prabhupada made about mundane educational centers, and that we shouldn't put our children in those mundane schools, but I think there's a big percentage of our ISKCON children that, at least for higher education, have to go to outside schools. What is your opinion? Why we don't have schools everywhere and a full-fledged university? What are the obstacles, or what have been the obstacles that hasn't been established there yet? All the way.
Well, I think the obstacles have to go back to previous attempts, which may have not worked out so well, and therefore people have some hesitancy. And the same reasons that those projects didn't go well, good people and adequate funding are also still problems. But there are attempts that we're making, not only in those areas, but to offer alternatives. Like I mentioned, homeschooling and other types of local initiatives where parents have the opportunity to utilize them to supplement what might be going on. I mean, if a parent is someplace in countries like in Germany, you can't not send your children, as far as I understand, to the government schools. You can't, just illegal. You know, they're going to come and break down your door or something like that. So do parents in Germany then just have the opportunity, well, what can we do? Or are there alternative things that they can do to supplement their children's education by systematically exposing them to spiritual knowledge? Sunday schools, some homeschooling thing, when the kids come home from school, they're not there 24 hours a day. And so we're trying to develop those alternatives that can supplement. And where there are a group of determined parents to start a school, then we offer help and do it, just like in Houston. We had members of our ministry from India, New Zealand, United States, come together to help them get their curriculum together, to hire a teacher, to train the teachers, to help set up the school, to sort of barnstorm in their community, send your kids to the school. You know, it's difficult to start it, but where there is the local will, there has to be a local will. That's the lesson we learn. The will can't come from an international body. It has to be a local will that we want a school. And we're seeing it develop. It's developing in Houston. There's another group of devotees in New Jersey that want to start a school. In Seattle, they've recently started a school. The woman that's head of that school is a person at Microsoft. She left her job to come there because it's so important, and the temple's facilitating to the degree that they can. But I think I would rather see this type of local initiative, and even if it's slow in developing it, because that slow in development makes sure they have good people and good funding and take small steps to develop, rather than, you know, developing something that they can't maintain over time. So that's my answer. Charles.
Given their free choice, they wouldn't put their children in any kind of state school at all. Is that something that we would, I presume that's what Prabhupada had in mind, that we would not participate in the state schooling system at all?
Yeah, well, again, material education orientates you to the world in a certain way, and that starts very young. So in a sense, yes, we don't want any part of that. However, we have to have something to replace it with, rather than giving our children no way to relate to the world around them. Better they relate in a way in which all of us who may not have had the opportunity to go to Gurukula have found the way to relate to the world Krishna consciously than giving them no training how to do that. So we do, and we have developed curriculum that can be used from the very earliest ages. We have very experienced persons in Krishna conscious education that have such curriculums. How they're taking it up involves a lot of factors, but I don't think that we can neglect the basics of education just because it's from a state curriculum or whatever, you know. Obviously, from the very early age, they have to be given exposure to transcendental knowledge and a perspective to see the education they may be getting, but there has to be something rather than nothing. Having nothing is not an alternative, not in my mind to be a viable alternative to having, you know, the basic educations one may get as an elementary school student. You have some comments on that, Lakshmi?
Just in terms of higher education, like you said, nothing is not an alternative, and we don't have a economic infrastructure to gainfully employ or engage people. And so if they can't take care of themselves or their families, then it becomes a big problem. I mean, some people have found nooks and crannies where they can be fully engaged in a Krishna conscious way and make a living. But, you know, you can't live under a tree and you have to do what you have to do. So the ability to take that educational system and use it in Krishna's service, so to speak, mm-hmm. is really important for us right now because we don't have viable alternatives in many places. And one thing you were saying that I was just about to say and you said is that one of the reasons we don't have elementary schools because when I was involved in what we called IPSET, ISKCON Primary and Secondary Educational Initiative. Many countries have very complicated laws in terms of education of young people.
and what books to use and what language to put it in. We don't have the financial resources to produce materials in many, many, many languages, and the countries don't allow it. It's very complicated. You know, Prabhupada was speaking in America in an era when we weren't very global and we didn't have a lot of children either. But now we have a lot of children and they're scattered. That's another issue problem, is that most communities don't have enough children to do anything more than a one-room schoolhouse. And then that means the community has to have enough faith in that education with no big gym and no laboratories and no all that stuff. And to be quite honest with you, most of the parents aren't comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. That's the difficulty they're having in Houston getting the school off the ground. The good intentions are there, but the congregation, remember, the initiated devotees are, well, you mean I take my kid out of like so-and-so excellent school and put him in this endeavor, you know, there's hesitancy. And
yeah, then how will they get into secondary school? Of course, that's right. Not necessarily true, because some of the biggest tertiary educational institutions are favoring homeschool students now because they think more. But most people don't know that. They don't follow. And they're very trained to learn, test, get high scores, and then compete for the few, you know, places where you can be entry, and then, you know, they think that degree is going to buy them something. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But we have to figure out the whole spectrum from cradle to grave, we used to say. You know, it's a whole spectrum. You can't just work on one part of it. You have to work on the whole thing. And that's why it's quite difficult.
All right. I'll go to these two ladies next to you. And Dorkish had something to say too. I'm going to get back to him.
Just a short inquiry regarding my poor Gurukula. My youngest Saki has been in the Gurukula since he was 14. He went through the Bhakti Shastra program, and he's going to be 21. So I've just been wondering for many years, how do they implement this when they leave, like say, when they leave Mayapur, come to the West or wherever? I don't know what his plans are, but how do they, you know, continue on in their life with whatever education they've had in ISKCON? You know, they're pretty kind of encapsulated over there, you know?
Mm. Well, that school that he goes to is orientated towards Brahmins that would serve within ISKCON in Brahminical occupations. And so how he would integrate would be that. If he wants something further, he may need further education, you know, to go someplace else.
I just wanted to mention real quick that they are starting a school in North Carolina.
Right, North Carolina is the other one, too.
And the other thing is about my son being in Catholic school, Krishna school, homeschooling, GD, and going to Northridge College in California. So that was not a problem.
Mm-hmm. Dorkadish, yeah.
You know, you described the grand goals and purposes, and you've hinted at some of the things that are going on currently. I'm wondering if you can articulate your immediate strategy of what's the important thing to focus on now to take it to the next step.
Well, we do have a plan.
You've hinted it requires this local interest. That's part of it.
Right. I actually wanted to get the document that has our strategic plan available, but I didn't have time to gather it coming here. But our immediate short-term goals are to promote this vision and provide resources. We have a website that we are trying to relaunch, which can be a place where people can go to find out, a place where people can go to ask their questions and then be directed to different resources that are available. As I said, most people don't know much about Ministry of Education or have a conception of it that was is dated. And so we're just trying to rebrand ourselves and get up and say, well, this is who we are, this is what we can do for you. Or even to the leaders, here's how you can help. If you have anyone interested in your zone, your temples, you know, interest in education, then send them our way, you know, so we can meet them, engage them. We're just in a promotional stage at this point. And then I think the very next thing that we need to get into are trying to provide some kind of standards. We work with the Child Protection Office, and with them, for instance, one of the ideas is to develop a an ideal list for a school in terms of all facilities, curriculum, what you might need to have. Things like governments put out. Elementary schools, the hallways have to be this wide, you know, you have to have this many bathrooms, whatever. You know, just simple things like that that help people when they think about, I want to do a school, then what does it mean? Well, these are the kind of facilities you're going to have to be thinking about, not that, you know, we're going to meet under the tree, you know. So trying to get those, get the basics out where it creates a good environment for learning and safety of the children. That's on that level. On other levels, Shastric education to continue to promote the necessity for learning and development of schools based on people's desire to do things. For instance, India, I think, is more advanced with VIHE and the Vrindavan Institute of Higher Education and Mayapur Institute to teach these Shastric courses. The United States could develop in that area, you know. We could have here, you know, a developed institute like they have there, so devotees don't have to be sent halfway around the world, you know, to study. They can study here. So just baby steps in those ways. I think we should probably end at this point. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.